It's hard times for the American dream. It's Harley Quinn on Amigos. Buddy, welcome to Amigos. I'm John.
And I'm Aaron.
And today, Aaron, we're talking about Harlequin. Did you like how I snuck in those Harley race references? Harley race?
Well, I was thinking Harley Quinn, the sexy clown girl from the old Batman the Animated Series, where she gained all
her... I guess I could have done that annoying high voice. That would have been an appropriate opening.
You missed a J!
Right.
Yeah.
I was sort of amazed to learn that that character was created for the animated series. She debuted on the cartoon.
Yeah, first of all, the animated series, bow down. It's so great, all right? And secondly, that she wasn't the only one either, and they took a lot of characters that no one gave a crap about and made them not suck.
Man-Bat?
Well, I gave it a whirl, but... Harley Quinn was definitely the number one success story, and then ultimately she ended up moving into the comics, and now she's a semi-movie star. I mean, people want to dress like her. I know that.
Well, anytime you've got a hot, sexy broad, there's going to be people dressing like her.
Well, I suppose you're right. She's nuts. You know, I've known a lot of chicks that reminded me of Harley Quinn, except for the hot sectionists, but they got the rest of it down pat, boat. Now, listen, you know, when you think of Harley Quinn, right, give me three things you think of.
The girl from the Batman.
Right, that's one.
And then I think about your court jester, just sort of in general. And probably like playing card suits.
Right. I'm the same way, except also I'll add in, remember the one, wasn't there a series of books called like Harlequin Romance novels?
Oh, you're right. Yeah, you always find those at the flea market.
It's exactly where I was going to go. I see those things everywhere, man. You can insulate your house with those old things. Have you ever read any of the romance? Do any men read the romance novels?
When I was younger, we used to visit my grandfather in Louisville, my grandparents. And my aunt is one of those things. She's something like 13 or 14 years younger than my dad. So she was still, when I was young, she was still like... And she'd already moved out of the house, but just barely. But all of her old stuff was there.
Yeah.
And she had on a shelf, she had a pile of these Harlequin romance books. And so, you know what? When you're sort of in that, you know, 11, 12-year-old phase, you open one of those bad boys up because you look at the cover. What do you see? Ripped bodice. That's what you see.
Or pirates. Guys like he's got a chick in one hand and he's like fighting up a bear.
Right, you know, right, and so you just flip towards the steamy parts, and you go, "Ooh, steamy."
Is that you know? If you're the author, because I'm assuming like tons of people wrote those, right? Not just like one dude cranking them out. Like, how much gratification is it when people ask you if you're published? You say, "Yeah, I'm published," and it's like, "Well, what have you written?" It's like I wrote like "Woman Falls for a Pirate" #6, in Harlequin Romance series. You know, I guess that's when you use the pen name, right?
The thing is, though, you know, the reason why there are so many copies of those books around is because all those books sold a million billion copies.
Yeah.
So if you're publishing Harlequin romance novels, if you wrote one of the ones that took off, then you're probably set for life, you know. But I imagine that the people you have to get the right cover because those things sell on the cover.
Like if you could put together, let's say you're the executive boat. Because I think, you know, listen, you've got a great marriage. Everyone knows that you're a romantic type.
I am.
Well-read, well-bred. So if you were going to put a cover together to move a bunch of volumes of book, like what would, just off the top of your head, what would be on the cover?
Well, you got to think, okay, you're selling these ostensibly to women, okay?
Right.
So I think that they really, a lot of these books, they sort of took the wrong tack. They show the man, but it's always the woman that's in his arms that's sort of being ravished. I would do is I'd spend a lot more time showing off the physique of the man on the cover,
right?
And then sort of just putting a little bit of the woman there in the corner, you know?
Right?
That's what
because you don't want to get jealous of her. So, but what's the guy doing? and you're on your cover. Oh. His shirt's all ripped up and cracked. Yeah, like,
shirt,
what's he doing?
His shirt, his blouse is askew. Okay.
So he's wearing the puffy shirt, that sort of thing.
Puffy shirt, exactly. And he's just sort of standing on a rock formation with the sun coming up behind him.
Yeah.
And he's just reaching out. His hand's just reaching out for the for the young lass to read his novel.
Yeah. See, what if it was me, I was going to put one of these together. I do it a little bit differently. The guy had no shirt at all.
Ooh. Right.
And he'd have one of those like real short like biker pants, you know.
Okay.
And he'd also be stood up on a rock, because that's part of it.
The rock is essential.
The sun would be setting in the background, and the girl is just like taking in the scene, right?
Yeah.
You see her like the back of her head, like you're her. And in one hand, the guy's choking out a tiger. You know, he's got it by the throat. And in the other hand, this dude just prepared this chick a souffle on a tray. He's like, hey, because he could cook. He does it all, man.
Yeah.
That's my cover.
Listen, and, you know, they should have consulted you when they were designing these things, because that's a winner.
You call it Tiger Souffle, I believe it would be the name of that one. I like it. None of that stuff in today's game, though, Boat. Not a bit.
Let's talk about what is in today's game here in Harlem.
Shall we? Man, what a love theme in today's game, Boat. Mm-hmm. Holy smokes. That'll get you going right there. Very nice. This week, everybody, we're looking at Harlequin, a 1992 offering from the Warp Factory. The Warp Factory, Boat. Do you remember anything about the Warp Factory?
I think that this was I was trying to do a little research, because I hadn't heard of this developer before. I believe that their output was pretty small. I think they only had one game published before this one, and it might have been an ST exclusive.
So according to our good buddies, and I'm going to plug, it's our good buddies over at Lim and Amiga, the Warp Factory was responsible for a game called Battlebound. Never heard of that one. Mm-hmm. But then they were also responsible for one of the King Dong, Zool 2.
Right, because I believe the coder of this game, that was his, he went on, he took the platforming knowledge that he'd honed in Harlequin and put it forth under the Zool moniker.
Yeah, well, you know, you're right. That's exactly right. Andy Finley, who coded this. This one was published by your favorites, Gremlin. I know you love to hassle Gremlin. You love to hassle
Bitmap
Brothers.
No, I don't. I've never
Brothers.
Hassled Gremlin. Well, I love Gremlin.
Oh, you love Gremlin. Okay, so I'm going to go back.
They're the only ones I don't hate.
Well, I was looking over their offerings, just to name a few here, because we've played so many of these. Mm-hmm. They, by the way, they did the Amiga version of Deflector. I didn't know that. Yeah. They also did Greg Norman's Golf. They did
also
Hate.
Great.
Another one we both played on the Specky. They did Ultimate. They did John Lowe's Ultimate Darts. How have we not played that?
I hope that's coming up soon.
Do you remember John Lowe? I don't remember
he
him.
He sounds
in the dark.
Like somebody that we're going to end up watching YouTube videos of all week, just like Jockey Wilson and Jimmy the Whirlwind Snooka.
And they also did Plan 9 from Outer Space, Nigel Mansell Games, Mickey Mouse, and of course this thing called the Lotus series, you may have heard of. So they had their hands in a few pies when it comes to that sort of thing, and many more games, you know, Venus the Flytrap, the Zools, the Switchblades, Technicolor, tons of stuff. Boat mentioned the coder was Andy Finley. This one was produced by Pete Cook. He was behind F1 Grand Prix, Granny's Garden, Tower of Babel, and World Circuit. And the graphics on this also by a fellow named Ed Campbell, who also worked on Battleband of Zool 2. And the music in this, if you like the music, you've probably heard of Barry Leach, I believe is his name, Leach. He's worked on tons of stuff. Just to knock off
he did the Lotus music, didn't he?
Lotus 2, Silkworm, Switchblade 2, Hero Quest, tons of other stuff.
It's the same that we keep having to say the word Switchblade. I just wish we could erase that game from existence.
You know, it's funny. I just got a note this week from a fellow, one of our listeners, who was telling me that we've got to get around to playing Switchblade 2 because it to rectify and vindicate the Switchblade series.
Maybe they turned it around.
There you go. And Happy Cody hopped in. John Lowe got the first 9-dart finish on television. So I think I watched that. So I guess we have seen this guy. I think I watched it on TV. This was a game that was played that came out on the Amiga and the ST both the same year. It's an ECS OCS two discs boat. This thing originally cost you £25.99 boat for this one, which that's a chunk. That's a chunk of change from back
in. Well, no, I think that's a normal game price. Amiga game, yeah.
Listen, we play so much budget stuff that if it's over like £2, I feel like I'm getting screwed. That's the way.
Well, in most cases, you are, so.
Yeah. So, Harlequin. Now, Boat, I know you. This game is two discs. There's a lot of game here. But they sort of did not go down the normal path for Amiga games. There's no awesome intro on this thing. Boat, did you look into the backstory of this game at all?
Yeah. So,
oh, good. Harlequin, I was hoping you had. Let's hear it.
Harlequin, that's his Christian name, lives in a world of imagination.
Yeah.
Okay. He lives in this world, Chimerica, and basically his life is a cornucopia of delight and wonder. Okay.
Yeah.
But at some point, as always happens to young Harlequins all over the world, he grows up. Okay, the cat's in the cradle with the silver spoon.
Oh, I hate that song so much.
And he decides that he wants to give up this endless delight and wonderment for respect, money, and a career. Okay?
Yeah.
Bad move. Okay?
Yeah, he made the wrong call there, didn't he, Boat? I gave up my wonderment for that, and now I've spent all that money trying to get my wonderment back.
Right. Exactly. And so... now, off in this other land, they never really specify what other land that Harlequin goes to. He hears that times are rough in Chimerica. Sort of a scouring of the Shire type incident has happened where a bad wizard or a bad guy has moved in and is tearing up all the crap. Everybody's enslaved. And who needs to come and save the day? That's right, Harlequin. So Harlequin... he shakes off the business suit attire, and he finds his old Harlequin suit from when he was a boy.
Yeah.
And he stretches that skin tight edifice over his loins, and bam, he's back. Okay, he's back, and he's ready to tear things up in Chimerica. He did keep his business shades, though.
You know, we just me and the Brent a couple months ago. We had a game we played on the old Atari ST called Black Lamp.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In this game, you play a court jester, similarly dressed to this guy. And I will say that one thing that the Black Lamp guy had going for him was he shot fireballs from his groin, that region. You know, this guy shoots hearts. Well, you can get a cream, I've heard.
Yeah.
But this guy shoots love, basically. Mm-hmm. Love. You know, because he's coming back to his childhood stomping grounds to clean up the mess of his absence. Because when he wasn't around, Boat, you know how it goes. It's like when I go away for a week, I come back to the house here, the love's gone. And everything's ruined. You got to be careful. Stuff will bite you. You know, there's dirt and crud hide in the darkness. It's the exact same deal.
Random animals have appeared in your living room.
Yeah. And I can't tell you how many times I've had to come back and squeeze in the clothes I wore when I was 8. it's a tough squeeze, Boat. I can tell you that right now, brother.
You need to be. Do you still have that sweater from the picture where you're in the wheelchair?
No, I'm afraid not, man. Boat. I'm never gonna. In fact, I believe that was burned multiple times. So it's an unusual backstory here, where you're basically reclaiming your. And the funny thing is, when you read the rule book has a quite a bit of several paragraphs devoted to the backstory here. And they go into how much wonderment and mirth this guy enjoyed as a young Harlequin running around here. And so one would wonder why he left in the first place. I guess it sort of alludes to the fact that he kind of got bored. But it said he had endless worlds. Endless worlds, Boat. Typical
hard to get
kid.
Bored when it's like, how can kids get bored today when they have the internet? That's what I
You know what's going on here, don't
is
you?
Endless worlds, you know?
There's no women in this world either. Guy grows up, he wanted to go find a chick Harlequin, you know?
That's probably the real reason. They don't go into that in the manual, but I hear it's in the extended backstory.
I will say one thing for this, because this came out in 92, So he would have a rough time. If he'd waited about 25 years, there'd be Chick Harlequins to beat the band. He'd find them every street corner that had one.
Right.
So with all that said, the game itself, the game proper, Boat, comes up on a real nice rendering of a the guy's face. I thought it was real attractive.
You think that's his face?
What do you mean? Yeah, isn't it?
I guess who else's face could it be? Well, I guess you're right.
You're right. I mean, what did you think?
Well, I mean, he's wearing makeup, and he's not wearing makeup in the game.
I mean, how do you? Well, you're right. You can kind of see his skin, I guess. Sort of.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah,
it looks like it's a big close up of his head. Yeah. And of course we heard the cool music. Now listen, I'm just gonna jump into this right away with a pet peeve. It's a classic Amigos pet peeve. All right. The game comes up. You're thinking, hey, this looks like it's going to be pretty good. Music kicks up. It's all looking sweet, brother. And then you start the game, you realize, hey, wait a minute. There's something missing here. Where's the freaking sound effects, brother? Well, that's because you don't get sound effects unless you turn off the music. You can toggle it. You have to look in the manual to find the key to do it. And then you lose the music, and it's only the sound effects, which are okay. They're nothing to write home about. What do you think about this? But here we are getting 92.
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, in the world of the Amiga user, this is somebody that's not barely been exposed to what you call actual games.
Oh, now
it probably
be nasty.
Didn't bother anybody because they were used to it. It's like eating dirt. When all you have to eat's dirt, you're used to eating dirt.
You ever eaten and dirt so before?
This is, yeah, it's nasty. am I going to bury this game because it ascribed to the conventions of the day? No. Because that's just what people were used to. Even though the Amiga could easily handle sound effects and graphics at the same time, it was difficult to program that in. You know, different guys did the sound and the music. A lot of times the music was farmed out, you know, to Barry and Alistair and all these guys. They'd put the track in. And if you have to mix in the sound effects with that, that requires some additional what you call work.
I don't know what it is with Gremlin, they were bad about doing this. You know, with Lotus, they did
everybody.
It.
It wasn't just them. It was
pisses
everybody.
Pisses me off. Other people got it. I played Lionheart. It's got both. You know, come
Lionheart
on.
Lionheart is the exception. It's the exception.
Well, I'm just saying. If
Lionheart
can do it,
family, I mean,
other people do it.
Yeah,
that's all
other
I'm
people do it. But that didn't bother me. This game commits much worse sins.
So, this game starts off, and you are the Harlequin, and this is a platform game with some puzzle elements, Boat. And you romp and stomp. You start at the clock tower. You'll be coming back here. It's just sort of the central hub of the game. You actually start at kind of an overworld map. You don't get to pick, but it sort of shows you like this large
stupid
world.
And I hate it. That's the number one thing that ticked me off about this game.
Back up. What you lost me. What are you talking about that you hate it?
When you show an overworld map,
yeah,
and you don't give the player any agency to travel on the overworld map, why do you even bother showing it?
This is your ghouls and ghosts type. It's just more like here's where you are, here's where you're going.
But they don't show you where you're going.
Well, it gives you're going somewhere on the map, it just doesn't tell you exactly where.
Again, this is the difference. Ghouls and Ghosts, they do it right because they show you a map of where you start and where you finish. This game shows you a big old clock tower with some junk in the background, and then it says, hey, you're in Chimerica, brother. Let's go. That's it.
Yeah. So, nevertheless, the game starts up, and this is a game where your guy, eventually you will, of course, update your abilities. But you start off shooting hearts out of your chest. It's love. It's love. Sweet love that you attack, that you murder your opponents with. I don't know what that means. And the opponents on these levels, this first level in particular, are these giant, like weird-looking, like clocky-looking guys. And then not to be outdone, there are some alarm clocks that roam around that fall from the sky randomly. As you go through the level, you also come across various weather patterns that'll try to hose you. This game has a button for hearts, up for jump. And the funny thing is, I played this controller, the CD32 controller, and I could never get it to naturally use a button for jump. I was stuck with up to jump on this.
I think the mistake that people make is thinking that the CD32 controller is going to be programmed to give you up for jump when it was clear that lots of people didn't want button for jump, and so they just didn't program it in the game at all.
I did. I wanted it.
In my experience playing this on the Mister, the A button was conveniently mapped to the WHD load quit key. Every once in a while, when I get hot and heavy in the action, I'd press that and have to restart my game. Oh, it was glorious.
Well, you know, I must have a different WHD load because I didn't have that trouble. In fact, I even got mine had a trainer, so eventually I could go into like trainer mode. I did some other interesting stuff to see some. Well, I mean, I wanted to see some of the various levels that were on offer here, Boat, because my skills weren't good enough. Now, just right out of the gate, as you go through this, early on, it's a run and jump situation. I will say there's some interesting stuff they do. This is one of those games that gives you like little like clues. So every once in a while, a light bulb will pop over your guy's head. If you stop moving, if you hit the space bar, a message will appear, and it'll say something like, you need to go up, or this is, usually it's a little, or like this door is barred. How can you get in?
They call it a hint.
Yeah. I mean, or something to further explain what you're looking at, helpful nods. I didn't find them that helpful, but they are there. You'll also come across, various pickups. You come across little packages that when you go across them, they explode, and food comes out that's like health. But here's a weird tip: if you don't fool with the package, it'll rewrap itself. You can come back later because you're going to be through here more than once or twice. You'll also come across things to augment your powers, including stuff like an umbrella that'll help you float down easier. It's a little bit better shots. Etc. And you'll also come across, like I said, these little clocks. The little clocks in this first level really suck, Boat. For me, I thought they come out of the heavens, and they you just can't see them come down. But it's like fall on you, and they're just irritating. We should mention Harlequin does have a health bar, and he's also at the right hand side of the screen. He's got this face, and when you get enough pickups to make that face fill up, then what you'll do is you get an extra continue boat, which is kind of neat. When you die in this game, you go to a continue screen, and if you have continues, you can continue. Otherwise, you're done. But you do get I thought you get a pretty decent amount of health. When Harlequin comes on the screen, it's quite a sight. Like lots of diamonds shoot out and kind of converge when your guy pops out. It's kind of an interesting way to do it. I thought it was attractive. Things blow up in a satisfying way. And, the bad guys in this are different looking. Boat, your initial thoughts when you loaded this thing up?
Well, I was impressed by the way the game looked, for sure. I thought the characters are drawn well. Obvious care was taken in drawing each one of the elements on the screen. Everything's pretty colorful. Harlequin looks good. All of his different states of being are nice. He even has an idle animation. He's always hopelessly out of breath, which I guess makes sense given the way that he traverses the world. But if you stop moving, he'll huff and puff. His chest will expand. So it's kind of nice to see that. The enemies are all drawn well. A lot of the sprites are big. They all, there's no just sort of static image moving across the screen.
Right.
The first thing I thought was, okay, I'm going to test, multiple things to see if this game qualifies as a platformer that I would enjoy. Okay?
Is this your old test criteria from the show, your old show?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, beautiful. Please go into it.
And so the first one is there variable height jump? Because this is something that every good platformer has had since 1985. If you tap the jump button, you jump a little bit. If you hold the jump button down, you jump more. You can time your jumps, and you can jump over enemies. You can really kind of control your guy with a pretty high degree of precision. This game does not have that. This game controls like Donkey Kong from 1981. You have a one arc that you can jump in. You cannot jump anything other than in that arc shape. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, are there a million things to collect and you're not sure what any of them do? The answer is yes. There are a million things to collect. You can collect cakes. You can collect rock sticks, which this is a thing. Do you know what a rock stick is?
I've got a list here of all the things you can collect, but it is a lot.
Okay,
I don't know what a rock stick is. Okay, like in real life, I don't know what it is. No.
Yeah, it is. It's a real life thing. Okay.
Oh yeah, it's like a shillelagh or something.
It's not a shillelagh, actually. It's sort of like that, except it's more like a candy cane. So a rock stick is like it's like a piece of rock candy that's in a stick shape.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I get what you're saying. Yeah. Because rock candy. I'm buying it. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't see that. I was confused by that too, but the Discord people set me straight.
Yeah.
Okay. You can go ahead, read through the rest of the things that you can collect in this game since you got it.
Well, let's see here. Like I said, we mentioned the umbrella, the jack in the box. You can hop on this thing. On the manual, they call it a space hopper, and it shoots you up in the air. Fireworks. You can collect fireworks. You can collect hearts to give you extra firepower. Of course, you can collect food. You can get food. So that's and then there's a bunch of other stuff. We mentioned the continued play tokens that fills up a picture of Harlequin on the side of the screen. If you get enough of those Harlequin, you'll get a continue.
Right. Now, I don't have a problem with putting collectibles in a game. It's an essential part of platforming. But when you have stuff that makes no when you collect a teddy bear, for example, this does nothing. Okay. When you collect a stick of rock, it does nothing. Okay. Why is it in the game? What is it there for?
There's no
score.
Goodies, I guess.
Yeah. There's no score. And that you will get things that say plus heart. Okay. When you collect some stuff. And as you move through the level, your heart will change color. But there's no gauge. It's not like a shooter where you have different levels of power. So it's possible that these things change the power of your heart bullets, but it's never explained in the manual, and it's never and there's no gauge on the screen that shows you anything about that. So this is another thing. This is another strike against it. Okay. The next thing is, can I complete the first level in under 3 minutes or so? No. Heck no. Did I complete the first level? Yes. But it takes a long time. This is another one of your classic multi-scrolling European exploration platformers. If you like Yo-Jo, you'll love Harlequin because they're almost the same game. You're traversing through. Actually, it's sort of like a mashup between Yo-Jo and Gods, because the main puzzle in this game is your classic switch puzzle. You've got to find a switch somewhere that opens a door or that allows you to reach an area or another switch that you can't operate unless you find the other switch. Okay, so if you like switch puzzles, you're playing on the right system, and you will like Harlequin. This game does have multiple entrances and exits throughout levels. They will take you to various sub regions. You'll go inside, little corridors, or sometimes you'll go under the water. What's great about that is that it mixes things up. What's not so great about that is that sometimes the doors don't lead to the same place all the time. This is mentioned in the manual, and they sort of laugh it off, like, this game's going to be hard to map. Well, yeah, if you make doors come out of different places, at different times, that is going to make it difficult and frustrating. So is this game on the same level of platformer as, what I consider to be the best on the Amiga, something like the Addams Family? No. Is this game right underneath it? I would say yes. I think that this game has just as much going for it as a game like Super Frog, as a game like Kid Chaos, as a game like Gods. This is it's all the same sort of level design. It's all the same sort of puzzles. It's just under a different guise. And I will say that doing it in this sort of make-believe land opens up the possibilities for level design. You can make a level about whatever you want, because anything makes sense in the world of the Harlequin. And as you go through the levels, I played the first couple levels and then I looked at the rest. There are a big variety of stages. I mean, that you go all over the place. And you do move around the overworld map. You don't actually move around it, but they show you where you're going beforehand. And the end of the game, probably the best thing about the game, is the fact that the game has a real ending. You jump in the clock tower and you blast off. As you do that, the credits roll. It's a very satisfying ending, especially when you compare it to, you know, like last week's game, which was just so horrible. I would give Harlequin, this is a solid B platformer on the Amiga. It's not the best, but it's definitely not the worst. And if you're a fan of the Euro-style exploration platformer, this is definitely one of the better ones on the system.
Well, I think I compared some of what you said there. I think this game does a little more than a lot of games do. And I mean, when I say that, you get some stuff right. I like that you get a goodly amount of health, and there's a goodly amount of health to pick up. Now, again, you're going to go past some of these areas more than once, or more than twice, or more than three times, and so it doesn't. It's not the worst idea to not go if you don't need it. Don't take it. You know, but it's, I like that. I like, of course, I like it again that gives you little clues or hints, which is fun. The level design is, it's not the worst. It's not the best, but it's not the worst. You're right. They do mix up the levels a lot, including levels where you, there's like a levels where you fly. There's levels where you become a fish and swim underwater. There's levels at all sorts of different, there's a level where you're like on music. I don't know if you saw that one. I thought that was real cute.
Yeah, there's a level where you're in a city. There's a level that's like a kiddie level, sort of like something out of like a James Pond game.
Yeah,
is in there. So
there's one where they sort of make fun of Mario Brothers and one.
Yeah, and straight up, this is a better game than RoboCod. So all those RoboCod lovers out there, listen, if you want to play something that's a lot better, play this game.
Why do you hate RoboCod? I've never understood your hatred of that game. You didn't hate it on the show we did. And well, I don't hate RoboCod.
About all the people that think about RoboCod being the pinnacle of Amiga platforming,
who
it just burns
that?
Me up.
Who
Lots
thinks
of people
that?
Do.
Nobody.
Listen,
I've never heard anybody say
that. I get
that.
Messages.
If you're sending messages about how much you love RoboCod, please stop. He's got an unhealthy obsession with hatred for that game. That gods. I think... sometimes we get on the various games on various systems for not putting enough thought into it or not being creative enough or not having enough different stuff. And I think this is a game where they actually really let themselves go. And you're right.
Yeah.
The motif, the plot of this game sort of opens it up to do any sort of nutty thing, you know. And so I think they did. I agree with you, by the way. One of the Achilles heels in this game is the jumping. So when you jump, you've got an arc. Now, you can change direction when you jump, but you can't vary the height or distance of you're gonna cover it even if you bounce back the other way. And so what that does is it's almost horrible, but it's bad because that you have to it means you have to take off in a very specific point. Or make a crazy landing where you have to sort of jerk backwards at the last minute.
Now,
what does this mean?
I want to talk a little bit more about the jump. So the jump is, again, I'm going to bring back, there's a lot of comparisons between this game and Donkey Kong, okay? In Donkey Kong, the key to success in the game is mastering that arc. And that's the key to success in this game. Also, like Donkey Kong, and my number one least favorite thing about this game that really drags it down from an A platformer to a B platformer is the fact that there's fall damage in this game. You cannot have a game where you're encouraging the player to explore by vertically climbing heights of platforms and then punish them by not knowing how to judge a jump properly by making them lose health. They put the umbrella in there to mitigate that, and I'm glad that they do, but they just shouldn't have, you should not have had fall damage in this game. What the umbrella should allow you to do is to position yourself, if you do miss a jump, to not go all the way to the bottom of whatever stage you're trying to work your way up from. But including fall damage in a game like this is a cardinal sin. And it's singly the worst thing about this game.
Well, that's exactly where I was heading. The jump, you can get away with this sort of jumping in Donkey Kong because it's a different kind of game. It's a different kind of.
You
platform.
Also see the whole stage ahead of you, so you know what you're doing before you do.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. This is. I hadn't thought about it until you mentioned it, but you're right. This is exactly the way dunk works, because you can dunk on, you can switch in midair too. But you're not taking these huge deadly jumps across half the zone. You know, when you're playing Donkey Kong, you're jumping a barrel. You know, and sometimes you just flip back. I tried to get used to the jumping in this, and what makes it worse, and you not to parrot you again, but you took the words out of my mouth. When you have that fall damage, it makes you it makes it frustrating, because if I'm just jumping from platform to platform, that should be something I can do. All right, it shouldn't be something that requires. This shouldn't be a game where difficult controls are part of the game. That's dumb. This game's good enough on its own right to just be a game. We've played plenty of games where they make the controls suck because that's part of the way the game works. This shouldn't be that kind of game. And there's no reason that you couldn't have made this guy more controllable in the air, you know, as opposed to it's just frustrating. And then when you fall off something, a jump you think you should have made, and then you take fall damage, it is irksome. And what's even worse is that you can fall a great distance in this game, and then you've got to redo all that stuff. It's one of those. And that also gets frustrating real quick.
Yeah. Having to backtrack when you make a mistake, because if you're playing a Japanese style platformer, most of the time you misjudge a jump, you fall to your death, and then you restart a little bit back where you were before, because you're traveling laterally. But yeah, in a game like this, where the majority of the stages involve climbing these big structures, you make one mistake and you're just repeating what you've done before ad nauseum. Yeah. And again, for people that are used to this type of game, this is part and parcel. Again, it just shows you the insularity of the European developer, because they were only playing stuff that was within their sphere. And if they weren't, they would be designing games based on best practices, and that's just not the case. So it's hard to fault them this much, because what you do get is you get sort of games that are sort of developed in these creative vacuums. But the downside is that when you expect a game to look like this, you expect it to control a certain way, and when it doesn't, it becomes frustrating.
There's a couple of other things this game that the guys did that I find odd about, if you want the truth. The music is one of them, but the fact that there's really no music, there's no opening screen at all. I mean, you just basically, you hit the button and you're in the game. There's a credit screen. And a lot of people don't know that this game actually has, you can save your game.
Yeah.
You have to, it's in the manual. You can save your position pretty much anywhere you want and then load mm-hmm. that position, which is good. That's great. Why don't you have that on your opening screen? You know, right beside the fact that you can turn the music and sound effects on. That's goofy that they didn't have that. It's odd that they just...
And again, this is the another sort of... When you have a game that's literally developed by one person, you're expecting that one person to be a pro at all aspects of the game, not just the game, but the UI and everything like that. And so it's understandable why that whole load save system is awkward. It's unfortunate that we don't have a way to put that up on the screen, but if you get a chance to play this on your own, the whole thing is just done very poorly. But...
Yeah,
the fact that it's in here is very, very good.
Because this is a game that it's just not like one of those, if you know what you're doing, you beat it in 20 minutes sort of affairs. This is hours and hours and hours of running around, and this is not the kind of game you're probably going to sit down and beat in one playthrough. Plus, you're going to need to save your games just because some of this stuff, again, when I mentioned that the level design was not the worst, it still has some of the tendencies of the worst. Lots of blind jumps. Lots of times where you just fall places trying to understand what the game wants you to do. You know, I had a lot of that. Like, lots of getting lost. You know, not so much on the first level, but on subsequent levels, I could get lost or get to points where I couldn't figure out what to do. You know, and so there's a lot of it there where you kind of want to save the game. But, you know, overall... I'm kind of like you. I would not call this an... I mean, when I think of an A title on the Amiga that's a platformer, it's better than this. But when I think of a B-level platformer, this is in that wheelhouse. I like it more than a lot of them. I like the character. I even like the plot is unique.
Yeah,
I think they put a lot of effort into this. This wasn't some throwaway. I mean, these guys really went to work on this, and you can tell. And there are little touches. The screen, there are some little tricks they pull when you go in and out of doors. where the game sort of gives you like the light sort of dims, and there's like an effect they put in that's real nice. Mm-hmm. There are parts of some of the levels that are quite clever. There's a bit where you swing on these big pendulums, which is pretty cool. Your guy can do a lot of stuff that you don't even think about. Like, he can sort of like pull a Zool and slide down like that. He can jump, mm-hmm. he can grab stuff. So he's a fun character, you know, and if you just play with the music on, which I did for a while, the music's real nice. You know, I mean,
you know,
Pajaka, no hack.
Jaga brings up a good point, because I meant to talk about this before and I forgot. This game reminds me of Earthworm Jim a whole lot. The level design is very similar. You've got a sort of a wacky character, you know, not as wacky as an Earthworm, of course. But this game definitely, that's it. And again, if you really want to see sort of the evolution of the Euro platformer into the 90s, Earthworm Jim is probably the best example of that.
And I like Earthworm Jim, but you don't like him at all, do you?
Well, the game doesn't control well. It doesn't control like I think it should.
And I think it's got a lot of charisma.
He does. He's got charisma out the wazoo.
And
I'll give him that.
I think it's a clever game. But yeah, it's definitely a more... When I think of like the difference between a Japanese platformer, say, and a European platformer, the European platformers are just more loosey-goosey. And sometimes that's okay. You know, but Japanese ones are a lot more pinpoint when you on.
People think that I hate Amiga platformers, but it's really the fact that there's a certain kind of control scheme that is natural to me. You know, when I am playing a game that controls really well, like Mega Man or Mario or the Addams Family. The character on the screen, when I move a button or I push a direction, he responds in a way that I think is right. And when you don't have that, that's the whole game. When the game doesn't control like you think it should control, that hampers so much of the fun that you can have with the game. So, you know, when you combine that with the sort of, you know, vertical levels that punish you by making you repeat sections over and over for mistakes, you know, it's just, it's hard for me to totally get on board. But like I said, for a game in this genre, this is definitely one of the better ones, and it's worth playing. This game is definitely worth playing on the Amiga.
Some people fondly refer to this as like the Amiga's Metroid. You know, in terms of the play type, where you're moving back and forth across the same terrain.
Sure.
You know, at first I was like, "What the?" But I mean, I can see where they're coming from. I haven't played some Metroid. You know, I'm the only person on earth that liked the Wii version of Metroid, by the way.
Well, I'm not a huge fan of the Metroid series because of that. I don't like all of the backtracking. I don't like the feeling of being lost that you get when you play Metroid. So yeah, I would definitely agree with that.
Yeah, but I mean, I think there's a lot going for it, and this is a real it makes you happy. When I was reading the reviews on Lemon, I like to go through and people liked the vibe of this game. And listen, having played a lot of platformers, this does have a positive sort of happy vibe.
Yeah,
you know, you're not walking through the sewer the entire time, you know, or you're not in a post-apocalyptic world. You're in places that have like food and fun, and there's candy, and there's, you know, there's all kinds of pretty stuff, and there's the colors
are
vibrant. You know,
it's not garish like Trolls AGA was either. Like, this game is bright.
Oh, it's way better than that. Yeah,
but it's not just so in your face, trying to throw everything at you that it just comes off as garish. So this is a happy medium, and I do agree with those reviewers. This is a game in the sort of grim, dark Amiga universe that we often found ourselves in. This game is a breath of fresh air, and it is worth playing.
Let me ask you a question, and then we'll go to the reviews here. Let's just for fun, let's say they made the jumping more Mario style and less Donkey Kong Jumpman style, right? Controllable jump. If that was the case, how much more would you have gotten out of this? They got rid of the fall damage. Those two small things. I think that's really what separates us from an A or a B. I think that the control, the jumping, and the fall damage. Because I can get past the rest of it. Like I said, the level design's okay. You know, and the rest of it's okay. Those are really the hang-ups I have with it. Just that I don't like the way he jumps, and I don't like the punishment you get for failing to jump because the jump is so stupid.
You nailed it. You nailed it.
There you go. Bo, did we get any Discord action on this bad boy?
We did. We got some reviews this week. Our first review comes from the living legend himself, Graham W. Vedby.
Oh.
He says, will this be a platform game John actually likes? This is a very unique but fine example of a platform game. I like the concept and the atmosphere of this game. It's very different to the usual fare, especially using hearts of different colors as the weapon and getting special items from present boxes. I think the music is quite good, the sound effects are great, and the art really suits the atmosphere. Unfortunately, again, you can't have the music and effects together, so I prefer the effects when I play.
Yep.
It's actually quite a playable game. It scrolls and animates well, and not once did I think I failed because of non-responsive controls. But some of the enemies are a bit nasty and cheap in the way they stop you. Jumping is a little floaty, but once you get used to it, it plays just fine. The levels are uniquely themed and designed, and each level does have a bit of backtracking to find switches and things in the order to complete the level. There are lots of little touches in this game, which in my opinion add to its overall polish. The light bulb when you reach a key point on the level, and if you stand still it gives you a clue, or the huffing and puffing of your character after doing lots of running, or even those special item boxes which close up if you don't collect the item are there, and then it's there later when you return for it. Yes, it has an underwater level, but it's probably one of the most playable underwater levels I can recall. The more I play this bonkers Gremlin graphics game, the more I like it. It's almost at the level of gods for me. So Graham liked it. 8 out of 10, Graham gives it. Harlequin writes Pajaco 6502. Everyone apparently raves about this game, and I have memories of it being well-received back in the day. I haven't really played it until now, so maybe you had to have experienced it back then to truly love it. I do recall having a one-level demo on a magazine disc and being quite enamored back in the day. But this is a tough game with floaty controls and punishing level design. You will fail and have to go back around, redo sections over and over. And those same controls will see you easily missing platforms that are a mile wide. And it's a real shame because with tighter controls, this could be, for me at least, an amazing game. On the flip side of the coin, the graphics and soundtrack are amazing. I would urge you to have a play if you haven't, because it's unique and you never know, maybe this is your cup of tea. While I struggled with the controls, I can see something cool and want to play more. So this gets a 7 out of 10 for now, and I'll revisit this sometime in the future. And he says, P.S. Playing with the joystick is better, so go with a classic joystick for the best experience. Those are our Discord reviews, Aaron.
I did have a look to see how this reviewed amongst the people at the time. The folks over at Lemon liked this game pretty good. They give it a 7.59, which is a pretty good score on Lemon. And it's funny reading the reviews. Like I said, there a lot of people are really into this game, the plot especially. The magazines were fairly kind, with scores ranging from the 90s, with the lowest score being Amiga Joker. Would you think they'd like it, being a Joker in there? 74%, so for Amiga Joker, that's a lofty score.
Yeah.
And most of the magazines have this somewhere in the 70s or 80s. The average magazine review rating was 88%. So I think it's a pretty decent score. I would probably put this somewhere in the lower 80s if I was going to score it, just for the reasons that we mentioned about. A couple things I stumbled upon when I was just doing a little research on this. This game had a long-lost Genesis port where they changed the lead character, changed the story. Never got released. I believe it's out there if you want to purchase it, if you do a little research. I can't recall the name of it. And get this, I also watched a video where a guy was talking about how this at one time was being reskinned to be released as a game based on the band Madness, which apparently never came to fruition. So I like that band. I was listening to some of their stuff just at work of the day. Me and my buddy are both big fans of Madness. And if you're a big fan of the Young Ones, they're one of the few acts that were on the Young Ones multiple times because they were the perfect band for that show. So they were a good band. I don't know how they would have done for a reskinning of this game, but I mean, why not? It bills itself as a strange game. So, by the way, we didn't mention this, but this game does bill itself as like the strangest game ever or whatever. This has got nothing on the game like Weird Dreams. I mean, it's not that strange. I like that.
Strange at all. You know, yeah, it's a great marketing tactic though.
Yeah. Lastly, if you're interested in picking this up, and by the way, I would have bet sweet, sweet money that I owned this. I looked in my collection trying to find it, but I don't have it now. But you can pick these up if you're in the UK for somewhere around $20. I think this was a pretty big seller back in the day, boat. So I think that there are plenty of these things around. But so on the boat scale, boat, where do you put this?
This is, I'm right there with you. I would give this as a solid 85.
I'm right there with you. This is one you should give a shot, and if you can get comfortable with the jumping, you might get into it.
Are you a sketchy tech? Do you have the right tools for the job? Have there been incidents? Next time, don't try to fix it yourself. Send your broken Amiga to Retro Rewind. Get a full diagnostic, a reasonable estimate, and the peace of mind knowing that your machine is in the hands of real technicians with decades of experience and cutting-edge repair equipment. Save 10% off your repair with the promo code AMIGOS10. Thank you to RetroRewind.ca for supporting this episode.
Amiga News. Campbell Train.
All right, Aaron, big week of Amiga News this week. Not so much for the games and the software, as much as some of the local events that are going on in the Amiga and adjoining communities.
All right.
We start with an event, a rarity, an Amiga, or actually a more of a Commodore event, right here in the United States of America. The Southeast Michigan Vintage Computer Club is rocking and rolling. Their next meeting coming up on April 6th, Aaron. The swap meet is now free of charge. So, one of the biggest things of BoatFest last year was our auction. And so whenever you get people together, they're always going to want to bring stuff that they'd like to find a new home for. And thanks to Amigo's sponsor and also a sponsor of the Southeast Michigan Vintage Computer Club, Retro Rewind, they are sponsoring the swap meet. This is big news for Adam and his crew. We want to give them a big shout out. Adam, of course, has the Commodore Chronicles podcast. So if you are in the Southeast Michigan region, make sure you head over to semichiganvcc.blogspot.com and put this event on your calendar. It's going to be a good one.
You know, I believe it's funny. We had the last Internet's Computer Club. I think Frank at Richard Rewind and Adam got together. And thanks to that little hookup, they launched this thing. They had their first meeting. It was a big success. There's video of it. And I suspect that in that area, you're going to get a lot of action. It's not like you're in Hurricane Boat. I mean, this is like, you know, there's Detroit and crap around there. So they've got, I mean, that's a huge, that city's got more people than our whole state, probably.
Yes,
so
that's true.
They're going to get a lot of action up there. And Adam's a good man to run the show with. He's got an infinite Commodore knowledge right across the board. So this should be a good time. And hopefully someone out there will send us some video of the swap meet, because we both like to. I've got swap meet fever, brother. Unfortunately, all the swap meets around here turn to crap. You know, there's not a lot of highfalutin retro computer collectors here in the home area. You know, I get a hillbilly flea market these days, and I think I tapped that sucker out, boat. So we don't get that. We don't get that kind of action anymore.
Only a boat fest. Only
a boat. Yeah, that was
boat fest. By info, get your tickets now.
Yeah, remind me not to buy stuff this year, for God's sakes.
Next up, my personal favorite, Mr. Front End for the Amiga, Mega AGS. Has released a new version. This actually was released at the end of December, but I just got around to downloading it, and it is amazing. Of course, there's lots of different front ends available. You've got the Mini Amiga. You've got sort of the various homegrown front ends. You can always run Tiny Launcher off there. I prefer Mega AGS because of the category sorting and the fact that I can run the entire operation with a controller in the laziest position possible, like a slug on my recliner.
This is this was formerly known as the Amiga Game Select or something like that, wasn't it?
There was Mega AGS is still what it comes up as. It's really confusing and dumb.
Changed the name, and I was like, wonder why I did that.
Yeah,
but I guess it was reasons.
They took a name that everybody knew and gave it a name that nobody knows, and still keep the old game, the old name when you load it up. So there you go. But
I think Amiga Vision was like some old software. I think I got the discs for it, And just an FYI, the Mega AGS is actually in a mini Mega, so you could use that. It's got all, it's expressible support. In fact, I think Amy Jimmy helped launch that back in the day.
Oh, it's fantastic. And I'm sure by this time next week, hopefully, we'll be talking about that new version of a mini Mega. So,
yeah.
But if you can't wait, you can check this out. This has got, of course, all of the new games that were released last year, all of the new demos. And I really like these focus categories where they break things down, games by year, different genres. And they also have something called PD Golden Age and PD Silver Age. So as we move through, especially at Amigathon this year, we'll be able to jump back and forth different categories and fire some of these things up.
Yeah.
Again, you can download this. Yeah, you can download this for free right now by going over to the Internet Archive, where all of these things are. And just like with everything with the Mister, it's a very easy install, and you can check that out.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's dandy, but...
Next up, Aaron, this is going on as we speak. Amiga Ireland 2024 is currently rocking and rolling. Tickets are still available because tomorrow, if you're watching live and you are in the vicinity, you can still pick up a ticket because, of course, Saturday is the big day for Amiga Ireland. Right now, we've got Pixels of Dawn is there. Are there any other people from the Discord that you know of that are there, Aaron?
Not right off the top of my head. I knew Pixels was there. I don't know. Did Ravi go to this? I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Ravi is also there.
You know,
so,
Ravi's
yeah.
in our
yeah,
Discord, so he's probably... I don't know if Dan went this year. And I don't know, did Neil go to this boat? I think he did not, right?
Uncertain. But at any rate, of course, Amiga Ireland, sort of the original Amiga festival that we know
Anthony
about.
Anthony Jarvis is there. So our
perfect,
good buddy Anthony,
perfect.
Yeah.
And so, and of course, this year, unfortunately, I was not able to make it because I already did a UK, or I was already over in the general area earlier this year. But I hope one day to return to the friendly confines of Athlone. And you can, of course, I don't think that they've got a stream or anything going up, but they always have some footage after the effect that they throw up on YouTube. So anyway, good luck to all of the organizers over there. We hope you have a good show, and we can't wait to hear from Pix when he returns.
You know, you got screwed going to this. Was it last year you tried to go to this and got hosed?
Yeah.
And if
yeah.
you tried to go
yeah.
this year... There's every possibility you'd have gotten screwed again because of the weather
right.
has been bad all week. Plus, they had all that stuff with that plane getting grounded. I read that like 2,000 or something like that flights have been canceled. So you would probably have gotten screwed again. And this is, I mean, listen, air travel it can be a bear travel. Mm-hmm. But hey, good luck. I wore my special Amigos Ireland T-shirt from a couple years ago to celebrate. I always like, what's the fella's name that runs this? Him and his wife, right? In their one.
Well, they haven't run it for the past 2 years.
I see. Well, we like these guys, and they were always nice to you, Boat. I mean, you had a good time over there every time
I
you
did.
Went. So I hope there's someone there right now streaming the show, and if you are, I'll give you a fine hidey ho. And I hope you have a good time, Boat, there over there. And me and Boat would like to go together someday. You never know,
yes.
Boat. It could happen, brother.
Let's make our next trip to Amiga Ireland hand in hand.
Yeah.
All right.
Right to the bar.
That's going to do it for this week's Amiga News, Aaron.
Sounds good to me. You ready to see what we're playing next week, Boat?
Let's see.
Oh, man. It's Public Domania, Boat. Next week,
That's
Public
right.
Domania.
That's right. And we do have a line on our next game. Our next game for next week is a Pac-Man inspired game called Plat-Man.
Can it be better than Crap-Man for the Atari ST? That's my
question.
New low end. If it can be better than that, because that game infuriated me on many levels. So we'll see how Plat-Man does.
Yes. All right. And that's going to do it for this week. We want to thank everybody that's watching us live on Twitch and YouTube, twitch.tv/AmigosRetroGaming, if you want to take part in the chat. If you like the show and you want to sign up to be a patron, that gives you access to our Discord server, the friendliest Discord server on the internet. We have brand new magnets for 2024. You get, and of course, you get the satisfaction of knowing in your heart that you've helped us along with almost 500 weeks straight of Amiga goodness.
Oh,
all right, guys. Thanks as always for listening. We will see you next week. And until then,
adios.
Amigos is made possible by contributions from listeners like you. Patreon supporters help choose the games we play, receive exclusive magnets, and get access to the Amigos Retro Gaming Discord server. Visit patreon.com/AmigosPodcast if you'd like to support the show and join our community.